Welcome to No Filter Sports. I'm Eli Zarrett along with Denny McClain and Bob Page. We're producing this on Thursday morning, March 14th. Hopefully you'll be listening to it today, Friday, Saturday, and on we go. We record on Mondays and Thursday here at the Red Shovel Network Studios in the beautiful basement of Drew Lane's home. Of course, that is the home for the Drew and Mike podcast, number one in Michigan.
That's an oxymoron, right? Like Lions Brain Trust, beautiful basement.
That's right. Anyway, speaking of beautiful and not so beautiful, let's start with, I'm driving in today and I'm listening to the powerhouse sports station here in Detroit. And the host, who I don't need to mention his name, is furious. Because he'd bought into the Pistons. They'd won 12 out of 14 games. You want to believe, and then look what they do the last two nights, and I'm laughing, thinking, really? You took that seriously? And again, I've said it 1,000 times, the mistake that media and fans make is you take short-term results, whether it's 12 wins in 14 games, and make long-term assumptions. So now that they've lost two, we'll make the long-term assumption on short-term results that they're really no good, like we thought they were last week. Bottom line is they're an average to below-average team. They will make the playoffs, but shame on anybody who really thought that they turned a corner and were now on their way to greatness.
They may be an average to below-average team, but they're not average to below-average talent. You look at some of these guys, how do you lose by 28 at Brooklyn on Monday night? And I watched the game, which was down here in South Florida last night. You see some of the numbers are beyond belief. Yep.
Well,
Drummond took three shots in that game. He took three shots. He committed five turnovers. He gets 5 points to go with nine rebounds. Reggie Jackson goes 3 for 15, 0 for 6, and Blake doesn't show up either.
You think all of that's bad? Do you really believe that's all that's bad? Wait a minute. Griffin had 23 points in two nights. What the hell is going on with this team?
I don't know.
This team looked like the Boston Celtics back in the 60s, for God's sakes, for a week and a half, and all of a sudden nobody shows up. Literally nobody shows up. I don't get it. Is it coaching?
Well, I don't think that it's coaching, although you would think that the coach has to get him motivated. But Miami's not a good club. They start that game on an 8-0 run, and then to prove it's no fluke, they start the third quarter to open the third quarter on a 21-0 run. I mean, you got to really, really be packing it in to allow a ball club to do that to you.
It was also the second game in a row.
It's quitting time. We're coming down the stretch here.
What's the second game in a row?
They were blown out by the Nets just as badly two nights previously. And they go to Miami.
28. They lost by 28.
In fact, they scored 131 Sunday against the Bulls, and in the last two games combined, they've scored 149.
All right, now here's a question I got for Danny at this juncture, okay? You look at these guys in all four sports, and they're making gazillions of dollars. And sometimes you wonder, well, you know, with so much guaranteed money, are they trying as hard as they could? So when you guys won the world championship in 1968, and you were playing for relative pittance, if you had had huge guaranteed contracts for several years, huge money, do you think your ball club in 68 would have tried as hard? Is this part of the problem?
Yes,
today?
I do. I mean, I know the nature of the guys that I played with. And, of course, we grew up in a different era. Everything was different when we were growing up. I mean, we had a win. You had a win to go to the next level all the time. But, you know, there's no explanation for this. I don't get it. I mean, there
well,
is
putting
no,
one fourth. They make too much money, and it's all
the money's got nothing.
How
to
about
do
how
it's got
how
nothing
the,
to do
how
with
How about
it.
The 82 Listen, game you, regular
wait
season?
Minute, wait a minute. If you're a professional, used to be a broadcaster. If you're a professional, anything, you're going to try to do the best you can every time somebody's looking at you.
That's right.
I agree.
There's thousands
that's
of people
the way
looking,
it should
and
be, Danny. That's
and
the way
and
it,
it is. I'm telling you, it still is. But how does the whole basketball team go to hell two nights in a row? I don't get it.
Not just the hell. In fact, what did Dwayne Casey say? He said,
"He said
one day you're the pigeon, one day you're the statue."
Yeah, that's right.
I hadn't heard that one before, but in any case, I mean, they're going to finish somewhere between sixth and eighth. They'll make the playoffs, and beyond that.
Well, what kind of a window have they got right now for the playoffs?
They're in.
They have a good chance to make the playoffs.
They're going to make the playoffs.
Finish eighth. Yeah, they're going to make the playoffs.
Because Orlando is ninth, and they don't want to win another game because they're just jockeying for a draft position now, so they're going to make it. They'll either finish sixth, seventh, or eighth.
Well, I think this is despicable, and I just don't understand how the whole team just shuts down, or is there something going on more with the basketball team internally than what we know?
Then you look at a similar circumstance where the Wings got blown out in embarrassing, humiliating fashion down here in Florida, the game I was at last Sunday. Then they come out, and though they lost, they play well against Tampa. And you watch the Wings telecast and all the broadcasters slash shills who are there. They're just going off about, oh, the Wings are trying tonight at least. Well, the Wings, they acted like the Wings won the game. They were acting like the Wings won the game.
And that's the way it's always been with the Wings, though, here. It always has been that way. The Wings can lose seven games in a row, and people will start talking about trading certain guys, but they will never get off the back of the Red Wings. Never. Have you ever seen the city go the other way? At least the fans. And I've always said, well, they put 20,000-25,000 fans into the hockey rink every night, and the bottom line is that's all the fans there are in the city is 25,000 people. That's all I'm saying.
One thing that's true. In fact, what surprised you about the rave that I heard this morning was that usually it's apathetic, you know, that nobody cares. So the first thing that surprised me, wow, he actually cares about the Pistons. One thing we haven't mentioned is that it's an 82-game regular season, and this is no excuse. And I traveled with an NBA team for 6 years, as you may or may not know, and the schedule is daunting. So I'm thinking, is it because they played on Sunday, then had to travel to New Jersey and play the next night, and then they traveled.
They did not fly into Newark, damn it. Will you get off this? The Nets do not play in New Jersey.
Okay, pardon me. They flew to Brooklyn. Okay.
Which is they flew to LaGuardia, for Christ's
sake. Same distance from Manhattan that New Jersey is. And then after that game, after they lose to the Nets, they fly to Miami and play again. So it's a daunting schedule, even though they did have a day off in between.
Daunting in what sense?
It's just tiring. You're going to sleep
at
weird
times. Travel's tough.
Going to bed at weird times.
I did it for 10, 11, 12 years.
And you played once every 4 days.
You know what? There's nothing daunting about it. Nothing. You go travel first class, charter airplanes, great food, great flight attendants. Everything is wonderful.
Denny,
you think that's
Earth
daunting?
To Denny.
Well, that's a good point.
Earth to Denny. That's the way it was when you played Major League Baseball and you go to New York for 4 days or Cleveland for 3 days. These guys might play a game in Brooklyn one night and the next night have to play a game at Indy, for instance.
Then they should have played baseball.
And the NBA is very difficult.
But what is so difficult? You get on the next plane.
Jet lag, 3 hours sleep.
Oh, jet lag my ass.
That's what's difficult about it.
Please, jet lag my ass. They're making $20, $30, $40 million
a year. That's a pretty big ass, too, if they talk about jet lag.
They can tolerate anything for $20, $30, $40 million a year.
And again, when you're playing on long-term contracts and it's an 82-game season and you've won 12 out of 14, I'm not making excuses. There's a little bit of a letdown, but not that big a letdown. And interesting, too, because you mentioned the Wings a second ago, Denny, that Tampa is in town Thursday night, which is tonight. Steve Yzerman here.
As we tape this show.
I said that already. And on the last home game, there was the fan with the big sign saying, Yzerman, save us. And Yzerman is here tonight with Tampa, which has the best record in the league. So kind of a little.
Does he travel with the team?
A lot of times he does.
Does he?
Yeah, he does.
It'd be nice to see him. Good guy.
Yep. Anyway.
Stevie Yzerman's spending a lot of his time at Detroit because he still has his house here.
Yeah, he sure does.
And his family's here. So it's not as though, you know, he's no longer the manager of Tampa, okay?
Right, he's out,
a consultant.
Right.
So I doubt that he's flying everywhere with Tampa this season, especially considering all the talk about Yzerman coming back to Detroit to take over, which I believe he will. And I've said before, I think that Kenny Holland, who's done a fantastic job, I love Kenny, despite what some Detroit Fairweather fans say, I think Kenny's going to become the new general manager of the expansion Seattle franchise in the NHL.
Well, why would he leave now? Why would he leave now is the question. And maybe it's just been here long enough.
Because the Wings might say, Kenny, you've had a fantastic run. The club's been bad for 3 years.
Not going to happen.
No motivation whatsoever. We got a chance to bring Stevie Yzerman home. You know, he's arguably the top general manager in the National Hockey League, Stevie Yzerman.
You can make him president and chairman of the board now. He doesn't have to be the general manager. He doesn't have to be running the day-to-day. He can be there and be Stevie Yzerman and do the things he can.
Oh, I think he would run the day-to-day operations. That's I'm
fine.
Guessing. I don't know. I haven't talked to him. And even Jimmy DeVolano told me last Sunday, he said, I haven't talked to Steve in a long time. That's pretty interesting, considering the fact that Jimmy lives in Bradenton and Steve Y has been in Tampa, but that's what he claims anyway. So I don't know. I'm surmising this. I just think that that's probably what's going to happen.
When Denny and I did an appearance in Winnipeg,
oh yeah,
1993, we flew there, and before we went on, we were behind the scenes, or you know, waiting to go out there. It was a huge gathering, about 1,000 people there. And John Paddock was his name, was the general manager of the
sure.
Jets of Winnipeg. And at the time, this was 94.
Coach New York Rangers, too.
Stevie was in a big snit with Scotty Bowman, who had been in his first year. Scotty's first year was 93, 94. And Scotty came in and basically said, look, this locker room is ridiculous. You got the coffee, you know, contingent. You got the Yzerman one. You're both a bunch of clubhouse lawyers. And so John Paddock said, I wouldn't trade for Steve Yzerman. He's a clubhouse lawyer. We wouldn't want him here. He divides locker rooms.
That's right.
Scotty Bowman and Yzerman hated Scotty Bowman because Steve used to score 65 goals, and now he's going to score 25 goals.
And Steve Yzerman said, excuse me, I believe that you run the bleeping Winnipeg Jets and you don't want me on your team? What have I won in Detroit? What do you want out there in Winterpeg, as they call it?
That's a ridiculous comment. That's what Paddock said.
I never heard that.
In any case, that's because we were there and you weren't, and it was behind the scenes, and he wouldn't have said it publicly. That's why you didn't hear it. But as it turns out, they didn't trade Yzerman because Mike Ilitch stepped in, and he realized that, you know what? He probably had been a bit of a clubhouse lawyer, fell under Scotty's system, believed in it, learned what it was to be a manager and a player and a captain, and look at him now. So great, great credit to Steve. Anyway.
I can't believe Paddock said that. What a loser. Jesus.
He said it privately.
He said it privately.
If he even thought it to himself, Scotty had him full of it.
Bob.
Let me say something.
He's starting to piss me off now.
When a bunch of guys who have played the game or did TV and radio together, when they sit down and they have some conversations, most of the conversations they have in a private room at a hotel or some other place are private conversations.
Right.
That's what this was.
That's why you didn't hear it. Of course you didn't hear it. But by the way,
guys,
Bob.
Are you trying to tell me that this is an off-the-record conversation? Like, I don't know that.
Oh, my God. Yes. He finally caught on. My Lord, hit the bell. Boom.
This guy, and he did, since this guy said that, what a loser.
Bob, wait a minute. Excuse me.
Bob, calm down.
Sunshine. Steve was traded to the Senators. It was done, and Ilitch stepped in and blocked the deal. You may not have known that either, okay? So Steve Yzerman was not a hot commodity at that time. He was somewhat of a pariah, and to his credit, he turned it all around. So I'm just telling you what happened. That's all.
I've never heard the.
Of course, you haven't heard of it.
Have a private conversation.
No, listen to me. I've never heard the term pariah associated with Steve Yzerman.
Okay, bad term. Okay, he was.
You're looking at one of the greatest players who ever lived, one of the greatest leaders, one of the greatest champions. How far up his ass are you?
You know what? I'm sorry you brought this topic up. Let's go. Major League Baseball gets very serious with rules changes. This is really surprising to me.
Stupid stuff.
Actually, some of it's okay. Actually, except for the three. Okay.
Tell me what's okay.
What's okay? Putting money, prize money in the home run derby.
That's okay.
That's okay.
Yeah.
You think that's okay?
They're going to put $2.5 million up
and
give it some incentive for guys to go out in the field. What they're going to do is they're going to get some of the better hitters again to participate.
Yes.
What I'd like to make sure, though, is that they're going to give the money to charity, and I'm not sure if that's going to happen.
Oh, you mean like Bryce Harper with his $300 million might want to keep the $1 million?
That's possible.
I haven't watched Home Run Derby since the TV show was on in 1961 and we were boys growing up.
Well, I think that audience is a rotating audience.
They're giving $1 billion to the Home Run Derby champion. Who won it last year? Quickly, you two guys. Who won the Home Run Derby last year?
The guy with the Yankees,
you see
right?
What I'm saying?
The judge won it? I think he won it 2 years.
The judge won it, didn't he?
So, Bob, who won the slam dunk? Listen. Major League Baseball.
That's another thing I don't watch. No clue whatsoever.
The slam dunk contest was great this year, and the fans love it. So
they still count two points out of mine.
Fans like it, okay? Except for Chris Berman going back, 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 back,
back, back, back, back, back, back, back.
and all the home runs and the home run derby. It's a great event.
Did you guys happen to see Wednesday night the Golden State Houston game? Game begins at Houston. Golden State gets a break. Here comes Michigan State's own Draymond Green, wide open, goes to the hole and clangs a wide open slam dunk off the back of the rim, and it bounces out the midcourt. Draymond. It's still 2 points. Lay it off the glass. Let's get the 2 points, okay?
What is going on with him today?
I don't know.
Everybody we brought up, he's ripped. He's killed. He's run over with a car.
By the way, Harper won the home run derby last year.
I just said glowing Harper things did. About Stevie Eisenman. Don't be ridiculous.
Anyway, that whole thing starts with the $2.5 million for the home run.
Okay, there's that. That's good.
And they're gonna that'll bring some of the bigger players back into it.
What they're gonna do is, and what they're really doing here with this is they're the Players Association and Major League Baseball are actually starting their contract negotiations. This is part of it. The deal isn't up until December 2021, but they're trying to get a lot of stuff out of the way early so they get, you know, concentrate on just closing the deal then. The one trade deadline is something the players want.
This is big. This is very big.
Okay, they eliminated the August trades. The reasons that teams will get more serious in the offseason, thinking they can't just make a late change. Why do you think?
So there'll be no more Justin Verlander trades in the month of August. They will not allow that to happen anymore. It's going to be the end of July.
Right.
At least according to what they said so far.
And the players like that because, like I said, you'll have to pay more attention to building your roster in the offseason, which means we won't have the delay on signing free agents.
Longer
window. That one's okay. The other one was the All-Star Election Day. So the fans vote online. The top three at the position will have a one-day election. It could be fun. You know, the players campaigning and all that. It's no big deal. All-Star game. Doesn't really matter who wins it anyway. And what was the other one? The three-batter minimum in 2020.
Yeah, the relief pitcher has to pitch to three hitters. And I think that's a terrible rule. That kind of upsets the strategy in a ball game. But you know the worst part about that? Here you've got the union who never – the owners came along and said, this is what we're going to do. You're going to pitch – you're going to have to pitch to three batters.
Right.
The players never objected to it. They never argued. They never gave one word of any kind of dissertation about or some, any kind of an argument as to why that will not work. They just let it come in.
Why won't it work?
I don't know. First of all, I think it takes some strategy out of the ballgame. You know, a lot of managers have a left-hander ready to get the big guy out in the seventh or eighth inning. So all of that, some of that's going to be eliminated. And why do you have to leave a guy in to give up three home runs in a row?
You know what?
That's a good point.
You know what, gentlemen, and I use the term extremely loosely. am I missing something here? Is Major League Baseball broke? If it ain't broke, why are you trying to fix it? Major League Baseball attendance is great.
$10 billion industry.
And these new ridiculous rules we talked about in the last show that MLB is behind trying in the Independent Atlantic League this year. What are you messing with the game for? Leave it alone. Everything's fine. Well, and hockey's the worst. NHL's the worst.
And there's two other things. One, they want to try to get as many two-minute innings between innings as they can, right? That they're going for a two-minute slot all the time. Mm-hmm. And then the last thing is, and this is the one I have a hard time to believe that they have, in fact, agreed to this. They're going to increase the roster by one person on each team.
Yep.
And it's going to be it has to be a pitcher, according to them. Now, I read it where it had to be a pitcher in one reading, and then I read it that didn't have to be a pitcher. So whatever it is, it's another player. Here's the problem with it. Owners don't want to spend any more money. They don't want to dish out another $500,000 as mandated and required by the contract.
Right.
So I don't know what they're going to do.
I'll tell you why.
The player.
Because with analytics now, more players being used, pitchers don't pitch more than 160 innings. Guys play multiple positions. So they're making it more of almost a free substitution-like thing. And so believe me, if the owners thought they were going to spend more money with the extra player, they wouldn't be doing it. It's a strategy to spend less money.
Adding an extra player, and as you say, the owners are going to have to obviously pay this guy.
Sure.
It's going to cost them money. And yet, at the same breath, Denny just mentioned this, they're talking about going from 2.5 to 2 minutes between innings. You know what that means? That means there's an extra 30-second spot being cut out of that. Now, you got guys making $30 million a year now, and baseball needs all the revenue it can get, so you're deliberately taking a 30-second commercial out between innings?
That's not their revenue. That's the TV network's revenue. Yeah. So they sign a contract with the networks, and the networks have to make money on advertising.
They're paying baseball these rights fees, so it all comes into the same rubric, the same umbrella.
You're probably right. Well, I mean, the money always winds up with the guys that own the most.
30 seconds every half, so that would be 9 minutes. 9 minutes in a game, I guess. That's And then
that's for a lot of money.
9 minutes in a major league game is a lot of money.
And then 28 players in September instead of 40, and only 14 of them can be pitchers.
So they'll offset the half a million they got to put up by only adding three people in September.
Yeah, something like that.
This is so you know what interests me
that's
more?
That's ridiculous.
What interests me more was the headline in one of the Detroit papers. Was it Wednesday or Thursday, as it was? They say, the Josh and Jordy show, veteran duo, gives Tigers a professional look up the middle. Oh, so you mean Jose Iglesias and Ian Kinsler were not a professional look up the middle? And these guys are better than Jose Iglesias and Ian Kinsler? Oh, really? It's unbelievable the garbage you see coming out of some of these places. Now, I watched, you may have seen it too, but I watched on MLB Network the other day, the replay of the Tigers-Twins game. You guys, I'm sure you guys know who Dick Bremer is, longtime TV play-by-play guy of the Minnesota Twins. Yeah, yeah. Very solid pro, good guy. And I was shocked to hear Dan Gladden, the one-time Tiger. He's their radio broadcaster, and he was on the game with Bremer. Gladden's very good. Got a nice broadcast voice. He's very good. And these guys were perplexed about, they talked a lot about the Tigers. They're perplexed. And Dan Gladden says, you know, they're talking about rebuilding. I don't see this rebuild. And he mentions a lot of these older guys, such as 31-year-old Josh Harrison, 32-year-old Jordy Mercer, and a lot of the other guys they brought in who are late 20s, early 30s. We're talking about a complete rebuild. We're talking about bringing these kids up, take a look at them, see who can play and who can't. And yet they're also in the back, they're ushering in the back door these older veterans who weren't as good as the veterans before. Again, I don't know what's going on there. I'm not sure exactly what the game plan is. I'm not particularly impressed with what I've seen, though the ball club's played pretty well during spring training so far.
Which means... Zero. Yeah. But in terms of the story, okay, you start by saying the story that they got a professional look up the middle. There was a guy who wrote for the Ann Arbor News years ago. His name was Jeff Mortimer, and I was in spring.
Remember Jeff? Love Jeff.
So
what was the title of the basketball book? Because you covered Michigan basketball on Frieder for years. Pigeons, skinny, bloody noses, and skinny kids, or something like that. Do you remember that book?
No,
Mortimer wrote? Very cool guy.
The reason I brought it up was that is because you say the story about the Tigers up the middle. He covered his first spring training after about 7 days. He started to look very, very nervous. I go, Jeff, what's wrong? You know, he goes, there's nothing going on here. He goes, what's my lead going to be? Nothing happened again in spring training today? So you have to find a story. And so when you got a team of retreads and unknowns and, you know, and fill in guys for a year that are 32 years old, you look for stories like that.
And why did why did you get rid of the other guys anyway? That's what I never understood. Threw the glove in finally, dead and over with. When Kinsler was let go, that was the end of it. And nobody at that point in time knew what the hell was going on. The organization is just not run very well now.
But, you know, I want to say something about spring training here. Ask that guy sitting across from you, Eli, what spring training meant to him in 1963. You got a lot of hungry kids there, talented kids.
Right.
They're trying to make the ball club. They're pressing real hard. Spring training means a lot to a lot of players. And even in the case of a guy like Miguel Cabrera, he's hurt. Is he okay? Let's take a look at Miggy in spring training and see what he's like. And he's looked really good so far.
Yeah,
he's done well.
That's what when Gary Danielson finally made the Lions, he said, you know, these exhibition games for the veterans, it's like, get me out of here. He said, for me, it was my Super Bowl. That was my chance to make the team.
And, you know, and the funny one of this entire spring training is Fulmer. They can't find his fastball. His fastball is still in the low 90s, and that's not good enough. They say, well, he didn't come to spring training in great shape. The hell he didn't. He's a plumber. He's a plumber during the winter. How can he be in shape if he's going to be a plumber down in all the poop all winter long and then have to come to Florida and do his thing? Listen, Fulmer's the best pitcher
they
have.
Will you stop it? Please respect plumbers out there, Denny.
I love
plumbers.
Because
the next time the three of us have an emergency at home involving POOP, see if you want to fix it yourself.
Well, we had a plumber event about 3 months ago, and I thank God he lives next door to me.
Well, let's talk about our other let's take a little break here. We'll come back and talk about the Lions.
Dr. John Kitzmiller has a team of therapists that will make you see silly. His company, called the Bald Mountain Behavioral Medicine, serves as a private outpatient therapeutic resource for children, adolescents, adults, couples, families, and groups. Its team of caring, experienced professionals specializes in psychotherapy, psychological and academic assessment, substance abuse, Suboxone therapy, MMMP, and pain management. Suboxone therapy is one of the new toys on the block. This product will be able to cure you of any kind of addictions that you have in a matter of days. With over 30 years' experience in these fields of medicine, Dr. Kitzmiller and his staff are dedicated clinicians, and they offer treatment for clients experiencing difficulties in such areas as addiction counseling, academic performance, and special needs. Call Dr. Kitzmiller today at 248-693-4000. That's Dr. Kitzmiller, 248-693-4000. And I promise you one thing, you'll get in right away to see him and his staff. Dr. John Kitzmiller, 248-693-4000. Don't wait. Make the call today.
All right. Hey, when it comes to your eyesight, the question is simple. Are you happy with glasses, contacts, and reading glasses? Would you rather have 20/20 far vision or better and crisp close vision without any of that stuff? It's that simple. Just call the Aldo Eye Center. Every week, Detroiters put those ancient technologies like glasses and contacts in the trash, then shake Dr. Yaldo's hand, thankful and excited about their new lifestyle. I got LASIK from him back in 2000. Was truly amazed by that, how much better I could see without looking through glasses, my big old glasses. And in 2017, I got multifocal lens implants that replaced my cataracts. I see the tiniest of print and everything else in pure HD. Multifocal lenses are the Rolls-Royce solution for people 50+. So it's very simple. Get a free evaluation from Michigan's most honored and experienced eye surgeon. Call 1-800-398-EYES, 1-800-398-EYES, or go to YaldoEyeCenter.com. Tell them that you heard it from me or Denny or Bob, and you will get a huge discount. How about some letters?
Did you give me my appointment yet?
No, because you want it for free, and it costs money.
Well, that's what you got. You got it free.
Hey, pal, I don't think you understand. He's Denny McClain.
I didn't.
He gets everything for free.
Even though I still have to pay for the surgical center, which is a fee, and I have to pay for the lenses, so it'll cost you a few bucks, but it'll change your life.
That's fine.
Can we talk about that later? Thank you. Anyway, I didn't give the number here. What's our number? 760-89-BALLS to leave us a voicemail or ask us a question, and also nofilter@gmail.com. Josh in New Baltimore writes in, love the show, guys. When you were working with players, who were the ones you avoided because they were complete jerks? Was there anybody you could not stand with the Wings, Tigers, Lions, or Pistons?
That's a great question.
Well, he won't name them, though. He won't name them.
I will. I'll tell you my most prominent was, we'll get locally, but Denny and I were down there once. The White Sox were in town, and we wanted to talk to Frank Thomas.
Oh, that's right.
Went into the clubhouse way in advance. I go, hey, Frank, I'm here doing the show with Denny McClain. I figured maybe he'd recognize the name. I don't know if he did. So I'd like to talk to you for a couple of minutes. And he said, I'm busy. Not right now. I'm doing something. He's reading the paper, by the way, sitting there and reading the paper. He stiffed us. So Frank Thomas was on my poop list early on. We already talked about Reggie Jackson, what a jerk he was. But, you know, there weren't too many local guys who were jerks. The problem was that if they weren't a good interview. So you see the media clamors towards the guys who are colorful, like to talk, enjoy the camera or the microphone. A lot of guys don't. We talked about the Lou Whitaker example a few weeks ago. Lou was a perfectly fine guy, just didn't like microphones or cameras. They made him nervous, so he was socially awkward when it came to that. So I'm not going to put anybody on my jerk list. A lot of the jerks, like Bill Laimbeer, Kirk Gibson, and Jack Morris, other times would give you...
Name them. Hey, he named them.
Of course they were. They know they're jerks. They admitted they were jerks. In fact, Bill Laimbeer once said to me...
You can still interview them, but you can still interview them. They were fine.
Bill Laimbeer was a jerk, knew he was a jerk, knew everybody thought he was a jerk, and was okay with that. Because he didn't like the media or fans, and it was okay. Because when he did talk to you, he could give you some good stuff. So could Jack, and so could Gibby. So some of the guys who are the worst interviews can also be the best. It's the guys that just aren't very verbal.
One guy, who was a total jerk to me. This is a wild story. I was, and you never guess who the guy was. I'm in the locker room.
What time frame?
I don't know. This must have been 30 years ago. Oh, okay. I'm in the Tigers locker room.
I'm in the Tigers locker room as usual.
Okay. I'm looking to talk to some guys. And Dave Bergman, the late Dave Bergman, happened to be sitting in front of his locker. I looked over at him and nodded and said, "Hey, Bergie." I mean, didn't want to talk to him. And I said, "Hey, Bergie, this guy went off on me in the middle of the locker room.
Bergie did?
Miserable. Don't you ever drop an
F-bomb. Why? Bergie?
Wait a minute.
What?
Dave Bergman?
Why?
Dave Bergman.
Why?
And I found out within the last 2 years what happened that day. And I still blame Bergman. Never coming to me and apologizing to me. There was an article about how Sparky ran the Tigers. The ball club weren't playing well. He would say to some of the guys, "Okay, pick out a certain member of the media today and really, really go off on them. Maybe it'll fire the club up." So I know for a fact.
That's hilarious.
Because I didn't say anything negative about Dave Bergman. I respected the guy. He seemed like a nice person.
He did it to fire up the
fact. That's what happened that day.
Oh,
and
God.
Bergie should have come to me later and said, "Hey, you know, Bob, I really don't feel that way. It's just that's what we do." But he never did.
Let me ask you a question.
I never spoke to him.
Let me ask you
to speak to him.
Here's the most important question. Did you win that? Did they win that night?
That's right.
One of 162 30 years ago. Did you happen to win the night of August 17th, 1966?
Yeah, I did.
You did? Okay, good. Glad we straightened that out.
Anyway, the Lions have done okay.
How the hell would I know if I won a game?
Well, that's my point.
I know that. I know that.
So we, you know, one thing I've always hated is trying to predict what's going to happen in a game. As we saw, Bob and I had egg on our face with predicting Michigan to beat Michigan State twice.
Well, you admitted it finally.
And I hate preseason predictions because they rarely work out. Teams just usually pick the team that won last year and think that they'll repeat. That happens all the time. And so, you know, what happens in free agency, what's going to happen in free agency, who they might draft, all those things bore me. But the Lions have seemed to have done okay. And I think it's worth mentioning they did make some pretty good deals with Trey Flowers, the end rusher for the Patriots. Danny Amendola has been a good receiver. Jesse James, Justin Coleman. So, you know, there was also a story this week in Sports Illustrated saying by a guy named Robert Klemko saying that Detroit's a terrible free agent destination. Mentioned some of the other cold markets, like without a lot of nightlife, like Cleveland, et cetera. But I think the money kind of tells the story.
Was picked up in the Detroit papers on Thursday.
Right. Okay.
And
right.
The writer said, took the completely wrong tack about this. Our city is judged the fourth worst. And he mentioned just what you did, Eli, the cold, gray weather. Nonsense. The football season ends for the FLs every year in December, and then they're off to Florida, their homes, or Arizona, or wherever it happened they live. This has nothing to do with Detroit. It's got nothing to do with the city. It has to do with the miserable franchise.
The organization, period.
Absolutely. That's why free agents don't want to come here. You have a 93-year-old woman as the head of the Detroit Lions, running the franchise and leaning on the advice of her two daughters, both of whom are in their 50s or 60s. Mm. This franchise has been a complete joke, an embarrassment, ever since little William Clay Ford got complete control of it, and with his henchman, Russ Thomas, the most evil Machiavellian person in the history of Detroit sports, destroyed our football team. They stole our football team. They laughed at us, and they thumbed their noses at us. I don't follow that. I had a buddy of mine from high school who still actually follows these clowns talking about Trey Flowers the other day. I said, "Who the hell is Trey Flowers?" "Oh, the Lions just signed him." I said, "I couldn't care less, and I don't follow the Lions.
So you're bragging that you're not a fan. You probably
if you are over the age, I always say, if you're from Detroit or the state of Michigan, and you're over the age of 50 arbitrarily, or maybe 55, and you still root for the FLs, shame on you and a pox on your house.
People care.
Adopt the team.
I disagree with you. I don't think people really
care.
You're
not from Detroit.
No,
you're from Chicago.
But you know what?
Stop it. He's from Chicago.
People really don't care about the Lions anymore. I'm telling you. You go to a Lions game. When's the last time you sat in the stands of a Lions game?
About 3 or 4 years ago.
Okay. And it was a mess, wasn't it?
Oh, well, it's ridiculous.
Fights, women getting slapped, men getting slapped, kids getting
disgusting.
It's the most disgusting thing I've ever seen in my life. And
I don't know what you're talking about because I actually go. And the last time, if you want to ask me, I was actually at a Lions game, was the season opener a year ago. And yes, I can send you pictures wearing my New York Jets shirt. Watching as the Lions completely laid another egg. I never saw any negative behavior by the fans such as you're talking about.
Last
time
I went,
it doesn't exist.
The last two times I've gone, it's been a mess.
Yeah. And And I think there ought to be anytime a 50-year-old
cut the booze off at about the end of the first half.
And it doesn't matter because they've been drinking in the parking lot beforehand anyway.
And they got it in their pocket.
But I think
Danny, you can't do that because if you cut the booze off, for instance, before soccer games in Europe and England, they wouldn't have an audience.
No,
the people be sitting
too.
To a soccer game totally stone cold sober and say, "Man, this is the bloodiest, boringest thing I've ever seen in my life." Then let's leave.
It's not a good fan experience there, but people like it. They look forward to it, and the Lions are very, very popular with their fans because they either love them or hate them. There's no middle of the road like the Pistons is apathy, and Lion fans care. And 50-year-old men who sit in a little cubbyhole all week long working in an office, with their feeling like a number, get to put their Stafford jersey on Sunday afternoon and act like a total idiot in the stands. That's their freedom to do it, and that's part of the pathology.
But when is the last time the Lions, you really felt like the Lions were trying to win a number of games?
They try. I think they always try to win.
Oh, I
think
they do.
Every player tries to win. People are watching.
And I agree with that part. Everybody tries to win. Why can't they go out and get the personnel that can win? They never, ever quite get 11 guys on the field that can play.
I'll tell you why.
They got a 93-year-old owner, Danny, and two women underneath her.
You really believe she's running
clueless.
You really believe, outside of the quarterback, you really think she's running the ball club? That's her boy.
Of course she is. Everything goes through her. Now, what they'll do is they'll make decisions, but then they'll go, "Mrs. Ford, so we have a chance to get, so-and-so, Odell Beckham Jr. from the New York Giants. We're going to make this move." Oh, really? Well, is he a good player? Who is Odell Beckham Jr.? Well,
if you think so, I suppose.
And Eli, to get back to the issue you broached, our wonderful producer, he does a great job, Brandon McAfee, there's your typical FL's fan. You know why? Because he's 35. He has no idea the history of this franchise. He doesn't know it was the greatest franchise.
But he doesn't go to get drunk. But he doesn't go out there to get drunk.
He likes the NFL.
The young people who are still supporting the FLs. Young people.
You are very fired up today. I got a very simple theory.
Too much coffee, I guess.
To answer Denny's question about why, I got a very simple theory, and I believe it's true. And that is, in football, somebody in one of three positions, an owner, a general manager or a coach, has to be a genius type guy, has to see how things fit together, has to know, like Belichick, just what type of player that nobody else thought was worth anything, like a Chris Hogan, can be a star on my team. And the Lions, from their ownership, that I agree with you, has been incompetent for many, many years. They've never had the great coach. The best coach, their winningest coach is Wayne Fonts. That's all you need to hear. And the general managers, from Matt Millen to Jerry Vannisi to Chuck Schmidt, have never been great.
Russ Thomas. Show some lack of respect, please. Russ Thomas.
Okay. So there has never been anybody with that sixth sense of what wins in football. And I gave the example, I think, on this show a while ago. Our old buddy Dwight Hicks from Michigan was a journeyman player. He was managing a health food store, and Bill Walsh called him to a tryout, and he won two Super Bowls with the 49ers because he said, this type of player will fit in here. Now, maybe Matt Patricia is that guy. That's why maybe Bob Quinn is that guy. But until there's somebody who's a certifiable genius, they're going to continue to fall short in a very difficult league.
We have a situation here where former Michigan State superstar, which is exactly what he was, Le'Veon Bell, just signed a deal for $12 million a year to go to the Jets. You look at what, again, Belichick does in New England. He's got guys he's drafting in the fifth and sixth round.
That's right.
They're free agents. The running backs are almost interchangeable. Right. They always do the job. Different guys coming, different guys going. And you have franchises like the Jets and the FLs who, as you say, Eli, are paying millions and millions of dollars for free agent players. Belichick doesn't need to. I know he's got Tom Brady, but he doesn't need to.
But they've also got the ability to identify players and positions where they need the help. We don't have any accountability with this organization. We've never had any accountability.
He doesn't like using the word we.
What do you mean we?
I live here, and while I'm a huge Bears fan, I pull for the Lions unless they're playing the Bears.
The truth comes out. You're a Bears fan. You're from Chicago.
Well, sure.
And he's a Jets fan and a Giants fan.
Nobody's perfect.
Look at this guy, Dave Gettleman. Look what's going on with Dave Gettleman, the general manager of the New York Giants. He signs Odell Beckham Jr. to $80 million.
Five-year, $90 million. Yeah. 5-year, $90 million
whatever it was. And said in late August, I said, well, I thought you were thinking about trading him. Well, we wouldn't have signed him to this deal if we're going to trade him. Now he trades arguably the greatest wide receiver in the NFL to the Cleveland Clowns and gets back a 17th choice first-round pick, a third-round pick, and Jabril Peppers, the great Michigan player who's never quite developed.
Right,
the Browns.
Right.
Now, the Browns are spending a lot of money, and they could actually be pretty good this year.
They should
but
be.
But they are, after all, the Cleveland Clowns.
They had a better record than the Lions last year. They were 7-8. The Lions were 6-10. Yeah. But, yeah, Beckham and – you see, all these guys and talent always wins out. In the last few years, Beckham's gotten into a slugging match with Josh Norman, the defensive back.
I blame that on Norman. I watch every New York Giants game.
Norman definitely
is.
He went on that boating trip while the team was planning a playoff game, came back, had a poor performance against Green Bay.
And Dick Cheney shot a guy with a shotgun one day. What is this?
I'm saying bad guys, if they have talent, they still win out. And just like Le'Veon Bell missed all last season.
Why don't you just acknowledge there is no talent in the front office of the Detroit Lions? When you let a guy by the name of Tate go, something's wrong in the organization. That move was ridiculous. Yeah. Absolutely.
Could anybody defend that move?
Well, outside of a little bit of money, and she's supposed to have $78 billion.
You're right. Well, it doesn't matter how much money she has. It's still the salary cap that you have to.
You can't work around the cap with a guy by Tate?
I think it was a terrible move because it destroyed interest in the rest of the season and fell apart.
And he was the best player on the team.
The most exciting player on the team,
absolutely,
for sure. No question.
The best.
You grew up in Chicago, a Bears fan.
Yes.
And Eli grew up in New York in Springfield, Massachusetts, and places. He was essentially a Giants fan until Joe Namath came around.
So I like them both.
I'm actually from Detroit, and I grew up with the Detroit Lions, and the sun rose and set on them. Everybody who played for the Detroit Lions was a god.
But that's
you
a fan.
You not only never missed a game.
Bob, that's a fan, right? That's a What's fan. A, that's a fan, a guy who
is a fan. Right. So what I'm telling you is this goes back so long,
forever,
ever since little Billy got control of the team. And those of us who, again, are native Detroiters for whom the sun rose and set on the Detroit Lions, we take this real personally, what's going on with the Lions. Yep. Real personally.
Joe Schmidt.
You've ripped everybody in the organization, including the owner.
He's frustrated.
The owner, especially the owner.
Joe Schmidt, who was a Hall of Fame player, one of the greatest Lions and linebackers of all time, was the Lions coach, and he led them to the playoffs against the Cowboys in 1970. And in 1971, he said, he told me privately, but I'm sure everybody knows, couldn't deal with Russ Thomas anymore. The decisions they made, they lost, who was the wide receiver they lost for $1,000 to the Rams?
Ron Jesse.
Right, the Woodcock putting his shoes in the trash basket
David
in the
Woodcock,
locker room.
Yeah.
And Schmidt was a successful coach, and he quit. So you add a move like that, add five more of them over the years, and that's why you can't move forward. They had a great coach and great prospects, and he left. And then you got into the Don McCaffreys and the Rick Forzanos, and the whole 70s were awful.
So it says you mentioned Joe, and you were lauding his accomplishments, deservedly so. What he used to talk about was he couldn't take the how come sessions. They happened every Monday night after a Sunday Lions game, when little Billy and Russ Thomas, who couldn't even play in the NFL, would call the legendary Joe Schmidt into their office and how come'd him? How come you called that play? How come you didn't do that? How come you put that guy in the game? How come you didn't put that guy in the game? You're talking to Joe Schmidt here. You're talking to Joe Schmidt. He just couldn't take it anymore. And that led to one of the greatest quotes in the entire history of Detroit sports, where Joe told a reporter one day when they're gabbing about this, he said, you know what? When you come right down to it, you think about it, life is just a big podcast? Life is just a big blank sandwich, and every day you take another bite. And you can guess what the blank was.
Yeah. So anyway,
you'll have to help me walk that one through later, okay?
Yeah. All right. Okay. Well, Le'Veon Bell
deals with an excretory function, Denny. Does that help you?
I'm certainly sure it does.
You know, can we briefly touch on it before the story goes? It's got a very slight sports connection. Unless anybody has anything big they want to talk about from here on in, but this whole college scandal thing is very, very interesting. And I had to laugh, and I guess the sports connection was this guy Singer, who was behind the scandal that's brought in Felicity Huffman and that actress on Full House, whose
whatever.
Name escapes
I never
me.
Heard of those actresses.
I never heard one. I'd heard of Felicity Loughlin.
Oh, the actresses we did.
Yeah. But there's so many ways people cheer or game the system to get into college. I think it's kind of a little overreaction there. I game the system too, and don't mention the name. But
Eli,
I wanted my
daughter paying hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Okay,
is that what you did? You
no,
get to
no,
go
I didn't.
Your
no,
to
no,
State?
No.
A
prominent alumnus made a phone call that took my daughter off the borderline wait list and put her in. So by doing that, I did rob a place in the freshman class from somebody who would have gotten in otherwise. So if you're saying if you connive to get your child in, it costs somebody else a spot. So as I'm looking at this, I go, God, how embarrassing, how awful, what a rotten system, you know. And yet I did the same thing. I have a friend who got four kids into his alma mater of an Ivy League school because he's given millions and millions of dollars in donations. So the system is gamed all the time. And so my question to you, am I morally on higher ground than Felicity Huffman? Or do we both do the same things if
you
she had more money?
You didn't pay hundreds of thousands of dollars. And they were also rigging test scores. They were changing test scores. I mean, this is a very big deal.
Yeah.
It's got nothing to do with what you did to give your daughter a tiny little bump with an alumnus phone call to Michigan State University.
And let me give you
the opposite.
Thank
you. I feel better now.
And let me give you the opposite.
Take a shower again.
Give you the opposite side of this. For 5, 6, 7 years, we used to fly a lot of patients in our airplane all over the state of Michigan, take them to the Mayo Clinic, the Cleveland Clinic. We charge nobody a dime, not a penny for fuel, not a thing, not for sandwiches or anything else. Well, when my first granddaughter got ready to go to college, I said, well, this has got to be automatic because she couldn't get in. And she had a 4.0.
Where's she trying to get in?
Michigan.
Really?
So I made a phone call down there and talked to somebody down there, and that led to 10 other phone calls. And then I finally get somebody from the sports department saying, listen, we just don't have a position for her. We don't have anything available for her. I said, you got 7 billion people going to that school. You can't fit her in? And he said, well, I also told you've helped the university out once in a while. I said, how about the tune of about 135 airplane rides over 6 or 7 years? And he said, well, you know what? Normally that would count, but a lot of things going on here right now, and sooner or later they're going to become public. So now I'm sitting and I'm watching all this stuff the other day. I'm thinking, is this what this guy was talking about years ago?
I don't know.
But I'm just showing you the opposite side. We do all of these great favors, and we did them out of
But that's
our
got
heart.
Nothing to do with
yes,
your daughter.
Yes, it does.
With your granddaughter
I'm on the other
there.
Side. She was a 4.0. We flew thousands, hundreds of trips for these people to get to and from the university.
What's that got to do with your granddaughter?
I tried to get her in.
I know. Well, you tried.
What the hell
and
do you
he
mean?
Failed.
Nothing wrong with trying. You failed.
We failed miserably.
I got no idea with what either of you guys, no problem with what either of you guys were doing. It happens all the time. But this is a much bigger deal. And you know what, Eli, since you brought it up, it's almost as big a deal as what's going on in college sports. We have 10 people arrested and going to prison over this Adidas scandal with the buying and selling of college recruits. And did you see this guy Will Wade, of course, has been suspended at LSU as their head basketball coach. What happened to this guy is the FBI laid a wiretap on him, and they've got Will Wade talking to a representative for the shoe companies, cutting a deal, cash deal, to bring a certain player to LSU. So LSU sees this. They come out and they say, well, you know, Will, you're suspended, pal. You know, don't let the door hit you in the butt. The next game, the next LSU game, Joe Oliva, the athletic director, walks into the arena and the fans rise and boo him and shout obscenities at him because he's the guy who suspended their head basketball coach. Is this crazy stuff or what?
Well, that's actually that in reverse, where schools connive to pay people to come as opposed to, on the outside, parents paying the school to get in.
And the fans don't care. Obviously, the fans don't care about that because these idiots at LSU are booing the athletic director.
But think, one father paid $6.5 million. I would just rather give her the money and say, go on your own. See what you can do with $6.5 million. $6.5 million.
Well, first of all, there aren't enough elite colleges or the ones that have the reputations. And my wife worked for an executive search firm. This guy would place CEOs and presidents in major companies. And he did not like, after years of doing this, the attitudes and the results he got from Ivy League and elite schools. A lot of people get in there because, A, they're entitled to it or their parents got them in. You got the George Bushes and the Donald Trumps and all the ones that go to elite school that aren't really serious students.
Eli, don't forget there are a lot of minority kids who get in and don't deserve to be there either because of this whole diversity thing and how it's
true too.
Affirmative action, of course. It is that way. It is unfair in many different respects. That's the way it's kind of been. Now, and you look at Denny and you look at me, you, of course, matriculated at the Augusta University of Michigan.
I am
a mere graduate of MU. And Denny is a 1962 graduate and a proud one of the School of Hard Knocks. So we're prima facie evidence that you can still go on
Have
a good life and do well if you don't go to Yale or Harvard or Cal Berkeley.
As I started to say, this executive guy who placed executive said, after 5 years, none of that matters. He would rather have a guy that went to a mediocre school but has achieved something in business or in life as opposed to just having the pedigree without having done as much. And so it ultimately comes down to what you do and what you accomplish professionally. But, yes, there's the, you know, people will pay whatever they can pay to say my kid.
And by the way, I don't think you're implying, are you, that the noted party cocaine Mr. Big Fraternity Boozer, George Bush the younger got into Yale just because his dad, George Bush the elder, went to Yale. You're not implying that, are you?
Trump too. And I'm not saying that
Trump. Trump too. What didn't Trump do?
Well, where did he go to undergrad? And then
he went to Penn.
Oh, Penn.
He's an Ivy League guy.
And then
Trump
he went to Penn. Wharton Business School.
It's unbelievable. Are we going to do Mr. Brown?
You got nothing else to say.
I got plenty of
we can add to the show.
Go ahead, Bob.
Listen, do we have topics? Hey, look.
Let's go.
We got topics.
We've got six, seven minutes here.
Let's knock it out.
We talk about dogs and sports and individuals who just don't try. We had a case the other day where I believe 12 dogs quit on their musher at the Iditarod Dog Championship.
No kidding.
No.
They refused to play.
And I follow that race.
This French guy.
Was there a ringleader? Was the lead husky arranged it?
One of the dogs had to go wee-wee, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I had to go potty. One of the forms of wee-wee. One of the forms of potty.
This is a four-legged dog, right?
The dog wants to go, and the musher, French guy, yells at the dog. You really scroll, you know, get back in line, whatever it was. And the other dog staged a sit-down strike. The guy was leading the Iditarod.
What?
And he lost the lead because the dogs would not go anymore because he yelled at one of them. So, come on, these are important sports stories.
Are you trying to tell us that the dogs understood that the one dog had to stop?
That's the implication.
Oh,
that's
my.
The implication.
You know, it's funny.
Ladies and gentlemen, you heard it here.
I thought, as you guys know, we have two French bulldogs, the loves of our lives. And I said to my girlfriend, I said, this guy's whole problem, you can't use French bulldogs to be mushers at the Iditarod. And I found that he didn't actually.
I was thinking about our show, which we kind of talk about the major sports. I was watching the golf a few weeks ago.
But dog sledding's not a major sport?
Well, though, but they have the U.S. Bank sports wrap-up or something before the golf tournament starts. And the first one was Mikkel Schifrin winning a ski race that was historic. I go, God, we never cover skiing. That's their lead story. The second was a rugby match. I go, God, we never cover rugby. A lot of people love rugby. And the third one was a fight in the pits at NASCAR. And so
that's the best.
And so then I'm looking at this yesterday with the sailing team it's been millions of dollars. They faked her as a member of the sailing team. The other one they had in water polo, that the schools care about these sports, recruit people in these sports because they want to win Big Ten titles and they want to win Pac-10 titles. And by the way, I wasn't sure aware that it was that hard to get into USC. It was like
college,
Yale and Georgia. Okay, but USC, it's a state.
USC,
is it that hard to get into USC?
USC is a private university, and it's an exclusive private university. And what else is hard to get into? The University of California at Los Angeles, not to mention Berkeley. Those great California state institutions other than USC are fantastic universities. So, yeah, it's difficult to get into. USC has one of the best, if not the best, film schools, for instance, in the entire world.
Yeah. Well, we can understand that, too. I mean, look where they are in Hollywood. I mean, they better be able to produce movies.
And in fairness, it's harder to get in. The grades that I got into Michigan with, I'd probably get into Western now if I was lucky.
And what's wrong with Western? My son Timmy graduated from Western with a plastics engineer and a computer science engineer. What's wrong with that?
Nothing wrong
with
that.
You know why he went to Western?
You're right. It's a good point.
Because he couldn't get into Michigan State. You know why I went to Michigan State? Because I couldn't get into Michigan. So Eli lucked out, and I didn't. I didn't even attend high school. I was a musician, and it was the late 60s. They didn't go to school.
Well, you're wrong again. So I barely snuck into Michigan State. Again and again and again, you're wrong. My son went to Western because he wanted to go to Western. What do you think of that? That's the first school he applied to.
He wanted to go to Western because he couldn't get into Michigan State.
No, no. He didn't even go at – listen, the kid is the smartest kid I know in the world. I'm telling you. And Eli knows him real well, too. He's just one of those kids that can do anything when it comes to his hands and formulas and applications. The kid's unbelievable.
I had some advantages, too, because my brother had gone there, so I had legacy. I was out of state, and they wanted more money from me. By the way, in-state tuition was $330 a semester back then. And so I also applied for early acceptance. So there's all kinds of ways to try
get in, yeah.
And a neighbor of mine spent a fair amount of money, a couple $1,000s, to get his kid tutored, who was a very poor student, for the SAT to get into Oakland. So at every level, it isn't just getting to the elite schools. People get it's a $2 billion industry to help kids with SATs, teach them how to take tests, to get into all levels of schools.
And I know we were going to try to do Antonio. I know we were going to try to do Antonio Brown because.
I want to mention this truism though to close this subject out. And I bet you guys haven't heard this before. It's amazing. Think about this. People go to college for one of two reasons only.
To get laid.
Either because their parents did or because their parents didn't. Think about that. Ain't that the truth?
That's true.
You go to college because your parents did or because your parents didn't.
Well, I guess it's not the most profound thing you've said today, but
can
that's true.
You guys been drinking together this morning long distance somehow? I don't get it.
Drinking coffee, yeah.
What did you want to say about Antonio Brown?
I got a couple comments to make about Antonio Brown. You just got a $35 million guaranteed contract plus all the bonuses.
With
and what
Oakland,
have you.
Yes.
And what I want to know in the NFL, is there any truth to the idea that if you beat up enough women, you get $35 million guaranteed? He did it a couple of times.
That's not true because Ray Rice still doesn't have a job.
That's right.
That is true. Antonio.
Yes, well, I said Ray Rice doesn't have a job.
He may be the only one without a job. But
there was video on that, yeah.
Antonio Brown.
Right.
Twice domestic violence, and he gets a contract. See, I thought the whole big hang-up with him was because of the domestic violence issues that he had in Pittsburgh, all right? It wasn't.
No.
It had nothing to do with it.
Kareem Hunt got a big contract.
Brown was never arrested.
Brown was never arrested, right? There was no video. Yeah.
I can't believe I'm saying this to an ex-professional athlete. Well, at least a baseball pitcher. But this is – professional athletes – get paid a lot of money to do what they do. This isn't college. It's not the local church team. Well, if you look at your ball club, your manager was a drunk, and he was drunk during games sometimes.
It's not
you had
true.
A first baseman.
It is
you
true.
Had a first
That's
baseman
not
who was
true.
A drunk.
What too. You told me? That he didn't. You told me that
Mayo was not a drunk.
He said he didn't wake up until 1 o'clock.
No. It was the other way. After the fifth or sixth inning, he would have a little cocktail if we were ahead. But he would never have a cocktail unless we were ahead.
Jeez. What if you fell behind that he was drunk and made the wrong substitution?
He went into his room, in his manager's room, and he started sipping from then on.
He claims they used to manage themselves, the 68ers would manage themselves on the bench because Mayo would fall asleep.
He was a drunk, too. You got a first baseman. So what?
He was not a drunk.
Norman Cash
was not a drunk. He would get once in a while a little tipsy, but never during a ball game. Listen,
he only died by falling off a dock drunk.
I played with him a long time. I never saw him ever poopy faced during a ball game. Never. Now, I saw him in a lot of other situations, but not during a ball game. Except for my roommate, my shortstop, I never knew another player.
He was a drunk.
Who played.
Drunk.
Roy Oyler.
Ray Oyler was just an alcoholic. I mean, he was sick. He was a very sick guy. And he had a fetish for older women. He wanted to go out with 75 and 80-year-old women,
Never
floats your boat.
To wrap it up.
Eli, I want to tell you this. You remember? I know you remember him well, Arthur Richmond, the legendary New York PR guy.
Why would he remember him? Why would he remember
Arthur Richmond?
I grew up there. Remember Art Richmond?
Arthur Richmond was a longtime PR guy with the Yankees and with the Mets. His brother was the late legendary Milton Richmond, the UPI sports writer.
Right.
So Arthur had this office in the back of the press box at Yankee Stadium, and we got along great. I loved the guy. He was a little tiny guy. And I'm walking out in the eighth inning one day so I can get down to the locker rooms to the game. Arthur standing at this office, he calls me. He says, hey, Bobby. Psst. Hey, Bobby. I said, yeah, Arthur, what's it? you want to have a little hot toddy with me right now? I said, Arthur, the game's not even over yet. I can't do that.
Anyway.
So that kind of stuff goes on. It's professional sports, you know.
Kind of a little wild show today, but we've gone over our one-hour limit that we like to impose. So let's call it quits.
What's our phone number that everybody has to listen to?
760-89-BALLS. Or nofilter@gmail.com, right?
One more time, the phone number.
Oh, 760-89-BALLS.
I don't care. Let him give it three more.
All right.
And by the way, that's you did refer to the Big 13 plus Rutgers tournament. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, that's what I'm talking about.
Okay,
yes,
just want to make sure.
One of your pet phrases like FLs. We'll see you next time,
by
everybody.
By the way, who are you guys pulling for in the college tournament?
Trying to say goodbye
now?
Three times now, what?
Who are you guys pulling? Are you guys still pulling for Michigan during the tournament?
Well, I would predict the Spartans to win the tournament.
after the way Eli and I have humiliated ourselves on this very program with the Michigan State thing, I am picking nobody to win this tournament.
I don't blame you.
All right. See you guys. Talk
have
to you
a good
next
day.
Time.
Bye-bye.